Welcome to The Dirt on Organic Farming, a podcast from the Organic Agronomy Training Service. Our aim is to bring skeptical agronomists and crop consultants into the organic conversation by analyzing six common criticisms and openly discussing the sometimes messy promise of the organic opportunity. The podcast format combines expert interviews with real-world examples to get beyond us versus them and towards a more informed understanding of organic agriculture. I'm Nate Powell-Palm.
And I'm Mallory Krieger.
We're the hosts of The Dirt on Organic Farming.
Thanks for tuning into season one for our new podcast put on by OATS, the Organic Agronomy Training Service. I, as you just heard, am Mallory Krieger, and I'm the National Program Director for OATS. And OATS is an organization that works to train agronomists, advisors, and crop consultants in organic production methods. I have a background in ag education, and for the last 10 years, I've worked with various organizations throughout the Midwest to create opportunities for farmers to access better information and resources to help them start and grow their own farming operations. I also am a farmer myself. I live and farm in West Central Illinois. And I grew up on a 1,500-acre conventional corn and soybean farm, making me a sixth-generation farmer. And I'm joined today by my co-host, Nate. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
My name's Nate Powell-Palm, and I'm the training specialist for the Organic Agronomy Training Service. I'm a farmer based out of Bozeman, Montana. I raise oil seeds and pulse crops and cereal, have always had a herd of organic beef cows. So since I started farming organically, I have raised a wide swath of about 12 different crops, but have kind of settled into a nice rotation that relies a lot on forages and those cows, but then uses cash crop opportunities throughout the rotation. We raise just about 1,000 acres every year of a mix of forages and those cash crops, and primarily sell into the food grade market. Since 2012, I've also worked as an organic inspector, visiting farms and processing plants all across the country. I've done inspections in about 45 states, and currently I serve on the National Organic Standards Board.
Well, Nate, I'm really looking forward to diving into these common criticisms of organic throughout this series. And in the many years of combined experience that we have working with farmers and working in organics, we both have been asked some really tough questions about organics. We work in the organic industry, but we know that it's not a perfect system. And people who have some really hard-hitting questions and some skepticisms about organics deserve honest and fair answers to those questions. And so we decided to take those six common questions we've received over the years and dive into them to really look inside and answer these valid, hard-hitting criticisms.
And I think the only thing I would tack on to that is I wouldn't expect anyone to transition their farm to organic if they had these lingering questions. I think it's really fair to be concerned about your operations viability by asking these questions and finding good information. And that's really what we're here to provide, is this open and honest discussion about how real is this organic opportunity.
Absolutely. So Nate, would you take us on a little walkthrough of what our listeners will hear from us over the next six episodes? What questions are we going to answer?
Well, we're going to hit the six biggest questions. So we're going to start with tillage, and then we're going to dive into weeds. We're going to talk about, is organic anti-science and can it feed the world? And then we're going to get a little bit into markets, as well as what is it take to get through that 3-year transition before you can sell a certified organic crop. So let's dive right into tillage.
I think you would hear a very common concern. I want to no-till, and I know organic farmers till.
Major compaction, that's what I hear from the no-tillers.
In this episode, mold boards and dust clouds. Organic has a tillage problem. General Mills is a proud sponsor of Oats. As the largest producer of natural and organic packaged food in the U.S., the company is committed to supporting farmers in transitioning to organic and promoting continuous improvement of organic standards and practices. Learn more at generalmills.com. Oats is brought to you with funding support from Stonyfield. As the country's leading organic yogurt maker, Stonyfield takes care with everything it puts into its products and everything it keeps out. By saying no to toxic, persistent pesticides, artificial hormones, antibiotics, and GMOs, Stonyfield is saying yes to healthy food, healthy people, and a healthy planet for 38 years. Stonyfield is a certified B Corp and is also helping to protect and preserve the next generation of farmers and families through programs like its Direct Milk Supply and Wolf's Neck Organic Training Program, as well as Stonyfields, a nationwide multi-year initiative to help keep families free from toxic, persistent pesticides in parks and playing fields across the country. All right, well, you know, tillage is one of those topics that is really concerning for farmers that have taken on, and rightfully, that no-till mentality. Among, you know, the farmers that I work with, tillage is considered anathema to soil health. You don't want to open that soil up because you want to preserve the quality of soil. And one of the kind of universal traits among the farmers that I've worked with over the years is a deep love for the land, that stewardship mentality that the land is their responsibility. And at workshop after workshop, farmers have raised concerns to me about how much tillage is happening in organics. The word on the street is that organic farmers are beating the heck out of their soil. So Nate, you took the lead on investigating this topic. What did you discover from our experts that you interviewed about tillage?
Well, Mallory, I think this topic sits really close to home for me because I'm from one of those Dust Bowl states. We get 12 inches of rain on average across the state, and we have really thin soils, shallow soils, really light soils. And so if tillage is done wrong, our soils blow, and we have years and decades of history with soil moving across the landscape because of inappropriate farming practices. So I reached out to Dr. Perry Miller, who's a professor of sustainable cropping systems at Montana State University, my alma mater. And his research focuses on dryland diversified wheat-based systems, including conventional no-till as well as organic.
I just wanted to point out that we're kicking things off in Montana because of the particular aversion to tillage in those dry conditions. But we will be covering systems and practices from around the country throughout the course of this episode. I asked Dr. Miller, what are some of the problems he sees with tillage?
I don't really see anything new, but we know that tillage is, you know, it has potential to be very abusive to soil. The two things I worry about are just flat out erosion, and there's actually tillage erosion, and it induces wind and water erosion. So, you know, being careful with those tillage techniques is, it's an old challenge. So it's a very old challenge. And the other we worry about is tearing down soil organic matter. And we know very, very well from lots of research that the more you till, the more you provide oxygen to the microbes that are responsible for consuming and respiring various carbon-based products in the soil, which have the net effect of bringing down soil carbon. So I don't see it as a new challenge, but it's important.
Yeah, tillage is very hard on soil structure and stability. And for many farmers, soil organic carbon is a marker of how well they're managing their soil health. So that loss of soil structure and stability that Dr. Miller just referred to, that can lead to erosion, whether it's through wind or surface runoff. Watching that soil leave the farm is an absolute tragedy.
Yeah, and there are certain environments, I'd say, especially Montana, where tillage is a top concern. And so I spoke with one of Dr. Miller's colleagues, Dr. Pat Carr, specifically about the challenges of dryland farmers in these really arid climates. Dr. Carr is a professor of cropping systems and conducts organic and conventional research at Montana State University. Previously, he worked as a research professor at North Dakota State University doing similar research.
The research center I'm at is strictly a dryland research center. We don't have any capacity to irrigate presently. But what is really unique about not just the research center's location, but really much of central Montana, is the soils here are very, very shallow. How shallow? Well, we feel pretty good if we can get a soil probe down to 2 feet. So we're talking about, in many cases, fields where we're working with soil to a depth of between 12 and 18 inches. So we really have very little capacity to store soil water in the soils and the fields that we work in.
I don't think we can emphasize enough that Montana is especially susceptible to erosion. We want to really acknowledge that it's an arid place. It gets maybe 12 inches of rain a year. And so those soils, when not managed properly, are really highly erodible.
Certainly when you live in a dry land region, I think you recognize the wind erosion that occurs. And we've had a very open winter so far. We've had extremely high winds. Now, when you live in the Northern Great Plains, you get used to wind, but we've recently just had some wind damage to some of our roofs. We've had gusts 70 miles an hour at the research center. So soil's gonna blow unless you've got that field and that soil armor on it. What isn't, I think, always recognized, however, is even in these dry land regions, we can have water erosion occurring as well, and we certainly do here at the center, because a lot of times when we do get precipitation in the summer, we'll have sometimes very heavy rainstorms in a short period of time. We'll get a lot of water deposited, and if you don't have fields that are about 0% slope or pretty close to it, water's going to run. So I think if you would really pool farmers in a place like central Montana, they probably identify wind erosion as their greater concern, but many of them would recognize that they also have to contend with water erosion.
So with all of these downsides to tillage, especially in these fragile soils like in Montana, Nate, how much tillage is actually happening in organics?
Well, it depends on the farmer's rotation. Most organic farmers are trying to decrease tillage through the use of cover crops and changing up the sequence of cash crops. I know in my operation, my goal is to till as little as possible because tillage is money out the door. It is steel, time, and fuel burned. So an example of how farmers are reducing tillage in Montana is by companion planting yellow sweet clover with their spring wheat. So the sweet clover doesn't come up that first year, but in order to get established, it's growing up with the spring wheat, taking off that second year, and ultimately you don't have to do another tillage event to plant it, and you can terminate it whenever it's best, most suited for the life cycle of the plant. So there's a lot of innovation on that front. But there's no clear answer to how much tillage is happening in organics because organic crop rotations and practices are so varied.
I talked to a farmer about how he's managed to reduce tillage on his farm and what his tillage program looks like today. Vince Yeager farms in southeast Iowa. His farm has been organic for 20 years and has traditionally been a corn and bean operation, but he's recently added livestock as a key part of his rotation. We tried to find a room away from the noise of the cows and the tractors and ended up in the living room of his farmhouse. He's remodeling, so there is a bit of echo.
Reducing the tillage passes from, I think, the most I was at is in the fall, I would make 2 passes. And I would be up to 3 passes in the spring, trying to flush weeds out. And now in the fall, on corn stalks, I'll make 1 pass. On bean stubble, I won't even touch it, and I'll just drill a cover crop directly into it. And then in the spring, I'm down to, on corn stalks, I have to make 2 passes still. On the bean stubble, I'm down to just 1.
Vince has managed to cut back on tillage through good soil management practices. He describes some of the techniques he uses to manage soil health.
Well, the biggest one is looking at the soil test, watching the weeds, or applying the minerals that the weeds are saying we need to have. They're telling us where a problem is, and the soil test is confirming the weed pressure that we're seeing. And we're applying the exact thing that we need, not a whole bunch of stuff. The cover crop definitely is helping with the structure of the soil. It's working up way better with that living plant there. And it's suppressing the weeds, which is one of the reasons the springtime there were so many passes. We're trying to flush weeds, the cover crops just hold them down, and we're not seeing it. I've also moved up the rotary on the cultivation. I've brought it up a lot closer to planting time to help control with any weeds.
So it sounds like what Vince is saying is that he's using soil tests to balance minerals, and he's planting cover crops, and those two things are allowing him to manage to reduce his weed pressure to the point where he's tilling a lot less.
Exactly. And it turns out that many organic farmers are implementing those same practices, which help them ultimately reduce the tillage on their farms. I spoke with Dr. Jessica Shea, Director of Science Programs at the Organic Center. She conducts original research on organic topics.
The first thing that I'll mention about tillage is that there's this idea out there that organic uses a lot more tillage than conventional. But if you actually look at the data in the USDA National Agriculture Statistics Service that they collect, organic and conventional agriculture actually use conservation tillage practices at about the same rate. So around 40% of the time. So we still have a long ways to go. But it is that common refrain that you hear that all organic farmers till and most conventional farmers don't is a fallacy.
Pardon the sound quality in that last bit, but what Dr. Jessica Shade is saying is that it is a fallacy that conventional farmers don't till.
But tillage is still used frequently for weed control in organics. And on the conventional side of the industry, you know, conventional farmers have tools for weed control that don't require tillage, namely herbicides.
Well, that's a great point. I think one thing I would tack on to that, though, is that a lot of those herbicide tools are becoming less effective. We're seeing conventional farmers buy steel and bring it out because they're not able to control, say, Roundup-resistant kochia or these other weeds that have grown resistant to a lot of the herbicides that are typically used. Dr. Miller spoke to this trend of herbicide resistance on conventional farms.
Let's first talk about the state of tillage in conventional systems, because I have been a big advocate of no-till research for the last 20-some years. So that's using very conventional, you know, chemical-based methods. And was really pleased to see, you know, the rapid improvement in productivity and soil quality that happened in no-till systems across the dryland northern Great Plains. But we've got a couple major issues that have emerged in those conventional systems. One is related to glyphosate-tolerant weeds, in particular tumbleweeds. So it matters less what an individual farmer does on their own farm, because even if a neighbor has got some, you know, what do you want to call it, Roundup-ready kochia, you know, that's going to tumble across your place too, and so there's not much you can do about it. So that's bringing tillage back in to some of these conventional systems. And the other issue is soil acidity due to urea fertilizer application over time, which has caused a stratification of pH in farm fields. And we're just really starting to understand how big an issue that is in Montana. And it's a bit of a surprise to us, because we had been used to thinking we had high pH soils and it would not be anything we'd ever have to worry about, certainly in our lifetimes. And so that's you know, not true. So to say, I'm going to use no-till as sort of a standard, but I wanted to say up front that there's a couple of real scary, what I call generational threats to conventional no-till.
Dr. Miller makes a good point about herbicide resistance. And it's becoming a really huge problem throughout the Corn Belt. Here where I am in Illinois, Palmer amaranth, water hemp, and foxtail are really three big weed pressures that have developed herbicide resistance. Sometimes when you're looking out over a field, it's gotten so out of hand that the field just looks like a giant mass of weeds. But in the end, this debate about who is tilling more, conventional or organic, doesn't really matter that much, because the core of the issue is soil health, not amount of tillage. So Nate, are these criticisms of organic farming correct? Are organic farms damaging their soil by using tillage?
Well, I think we need to narrow the question a bit and focus on some key indicators of soil health. One indicator of soil health is soil organic carbon. So to discover whether organic farmers are destroying soil, we need to measure the amount of carbon present in the soil profile. I talked to Dr. Jessica Shade about research that the Organic Center has done on this topic.
the Organic Center has done some research on this, because one of the questions or comments I always get is that, okay, but there's a lot of different management styles within organic or within conventional. So how can you really compare the two systems? Because everyone knows a conventional farmer that's doing amazing soil management, and everyone has an example of an organic farm that they think could be doing better. So one of the things that the Organic Center did is we collaborated with the National Soil Project at Northeastern University to actually take all of that noise into account. And so we did this huge survey where we actually got farmers involved. We had over 1,000 soil samples from all over the United States that we collected, analyzed, looked at the carbon, controlled for noise, like different soil types, different location, different management styles, etc. And what we found was that even with all of that noise, organics still had consistently higher levels of carbon accumulation in the soil. So when you take this snapshot of what's going on organic farms versus what's happening on conventional farms, in general, organic is sequestering more carbon in the soil.
So it's important to look at the change in soil carbon as you move through the soil profile to really understand the carbon storing implications of conventional versus organic practices.
And the USDA's Agricultural Research Service did a study on this in their Farming Systems Project, which is an experiment that was established back in 1996. So it provides a long-term comparison of organic to conventional cropping systems. And they compared soil organic carbon between organic plots that do use tillage to conventional no-till plots. And typically studies that compare soil organic carbon sample at very shallow levels of the soil. But this study was a little different because it looked at carbon in the soil at intervals all the way down to a depth of 1 meter. And what they found was that in the first 4 to 5 centimeters of soil, the conventional no-till plots do have higher levels of soil organic carbon than the organic full-till plots. But after about 6 centimeters, that trend reversed, and the organic plots had more carbon all the way down through to about 40 centimeters, after which there's kind of the same level of carbon. And when they summed up the total soil organic carbon in each system over the full depth of a meter, they found that soil organic carbon is still significantly greater in organic plots than conventional, even when you compare full tillage in organic to no-till in conventional. And that's because carbon in a no-till system mostly accumulates on the surface where those plant residues are deposited. But in an organic tillage system, those residues are worked down and buried into the soil. So there's a greater soil carbon at deeper depths where it's more resilient to degradation. And you know, my point isn't to suggest that we shouldn't be promoting increased, reduced tillage in organic systems for soil conservation. It's just saying that the suite of soil fertility management practices used by organic farmers in combination with tillage still leads to greater increases in soil carbon than no-till conventional.
I definitely find it reassuring to know that despite using some tillage, organic farmers are still managing to cultivate healthy soils. But I personally know a lot of farmers who are interested in organics, and they've really contemplated and considered becoming organic farmers. Oftentimes, they're drawn in by that price premium, that higher profitability that could be offered by organics, and they're also drawn in by moving away from chemistry as a means of production. But even among that group, who's largely really open to the idea of organic, they just cannot bring themselves to till the soil. They have a really closely held value to steward the health of that soil. And in their perspective, tillage is in direct conflict with that value. So Nate, what did you find out about what options are available for those farmers?
Well, someone who's done a lot of work in this area is Dr. Joel Groover, director of the Organic Research Program at Western Illinois University. Dr. Gruver offered some insight into the possibility of a no-till system in organics.
I think there is a movement towards reduced tillage in organics, and we have some interesting examples right now of large-scale conventional farmers that are long-term no-tillers that have decided for various reasons, maybe it's a landlord, maybe it's their own personal soil health quest that they think to get to the next level in soil health, they need to try organics. But so we have some people that are really doing interesting things with eliminating tillage, using a lot of technology that are coming out of long-term no-till on their conventional farms. And we're talking, you know, thousands of acres. And then, of course, there are smaller scale, longer term organic farmers that are just looking for solutions to management problems. And they, you know, they see adopting more cover crops, reducing tillage as a, you know, a strategy to address some of the problems on their farm. You know, they see presentations at meetings, they go to field days, they see that people are doing organic no-till, and particularly organic no-till soybeans is working pretty consistently in many different locations. It's not working 100% of the time, but it works in places that have good management. It's working well over 50% of the time, and so people are seeing that and trying to figure out how to bring that into maybe their long-term organic farming systems.
So back to Montana, Dr. Perry Miller also has done research experimenting with various types of organic no-till systems.
You know, so our premise was very simple. It was just, you know, we see some very positive ecological things happening within sort of the ecological makeup of some of these no-till systems, especially where farmers maintain a decent amount of crop diversity in them and cropping intensity. So, you know, less summer fallow and more years of cropping, which is really favorable for soil development. So one of our simpler things, well, you know, and they can use glyphosate to really manage those conventional systems. Maybe there's a chemical that we can use in organic. And so one of the first things we tried was high rates of industrial strength vinegar to see if we could take down green manure with a chemical application and, you know, essentially sort of have an organic form of a conventional type of no-till, a spray-based no-till, if you want to look at it that way. That did not work. So we were probably really naive, but because vinegar is a contact chemical, it will burn down vegetation that is present, but it doesn't kill the growing points of the plants, and so you end up with a plant with scorched leaves. But you know, by the next day, literally, the growing points are throwing out new leaves, and so it didn't terminate those green manures like we had hoped. We have also, it was a weak effort, I guess, I'll say, because we didn't really look at it exhaustively, but we have tried roller crimping. I had one built, and what we found is that by the time we could actually crimp peas, we had kind of two problems. One is they'd already made seed. I mean, you needed a pretty mature stem before we could get the crimper to actually kill the peas and stop their growth. And then the second problem was it just really wasn't enough biomass. If you compare the kind of potential biomass that winter rye can generate out in the Midwest, it just, you know, it's a small fraction of that. So it really didn't provide enough of a carpet to prevent weed germination. But the early results were disappointing enough that, you know, I guess we didn't pursue it.
Well, it sounds like that holy grail of continuous no-till in organics may be just that, and not really what we should be aiming for. It can be really difficult to pull off continuous no-till. Heck, Dr. Gruver mentioned a 50% success rate. That's a lot of risk in a cropping system. So is there a middle road that significantly reduces tillage, avoids all of the risks of the continuous no-till system, but also allows farmers to build soil carbon?
So I think this is a much more timely question about how do we ultimately reduce tillage, but not necessarily aim for no-till as the finish line. Rather, how do we get as little tillage with as good of yields and ultimately well-managed fields as possible? So I spoke to Dr. Matt Ryan about rotational tillage systems. Now, Dr. Ryan's in a very different region than Montana. He's over in New York State, lots more rain, much different soils. So very different system than what Dr. Perry Miller and Pat Carr were talking about. He's an associate professor of cropping systems at Cornell, and his research focuses on using cover crops to ultimately reduce tillage in organic systems.
So with organic farming and reducing tillage, one thing that has become popular over the past 20 years is using cover crops to facilitate no-till production, no-till planting. This is not a continuous organic no-till system, but rather a system that enables you to no-till plant cash crops. And we call it rotational no-till. This has really been borrowed from farmers in Brazil and in South America, this use of mechanical termination for managing cover crops. And I feel like there's a lot of potential with this system. Certainly having cover crops and allowing those cover crops to grow tall and put on a lot of biomass, that's really good for soil health. And some of the innovations that we've seen is organic farmers learning from non-organic farmers in terms of some of the technology that's been developed with traditional conventional no-till practices. And so some of those technologies are now being integrated and adopted by organic farmers, and we're seeing organic farmers that are investing in new planters to enable them to plant through that thick mulch. And also, I'd say there's quite a bit of potential for integrating digital technologies and this combination of both agroecological management and precision agriculture. And so I feel like that's really where we're headed in terms of sustainable crop production in the future. Having organic farmers work with non-organic farmers and learn from them, adopt some of their practices. And certainly, you know, it works both ways. I'd say a lot of non-organic farmers over the past couple of decades have really been learning from organic farmers and seeing some of the benefits in terms of soil health and have adopted cover crops, for example. And you see this large increase in cover crop acreage and with non-organic farms. And I'd say, you know, a lot of that, those practices, you know, were really developed and have been used by organic farmers for a very long period of time. And so, again, this cross-adoption is something that I'm very interested in.
I really like this idea that we don't have to be siloed. It shouldn't be, if you're an organic farmer, this is how you farm. And if you're a conventional farmer, this is how you do it. Every farmer should be able to work towards the best system possible. And that means learning from other farmers, both conventional and organic.
Definitely. The agriculture industry can only benefit from more cross-pollination of ideas and open discussions about best practices. While learning from other farmers is key, not everyone is lucky enough to have an already certified organic neighbor. And that's where agronomists and crop consultants can serve as a source of new ideas and strategies for farmers to try out. And unlike in conventional farming, there are very few organic advisors out there right now. And I think there's a real need for their services to help the industry grow.
Absolutely, Nate. I think that you've really hit the nail on the head. There is a need for advisors out there. But at the end of the day, you know, advisors and us, we can talk about practices all we want. But I'm sure that our listeners also want to know what the yields are looking like in these systems.
You know, I thought that might be of interest. So I talked to Dr. Ryan about what he's seen in the Northeast with no-till systems.
In terms of yields, our yields of organic soybean have been quite good. And so we would see typically 45 to 50, sometimes 60 bushels per acre with our organic no-till soybean system. What we have seen over the past several years, though, is that it really depends on spring weather conditions. The organic no-till soybean system, where you're no-till planting soybean into cereal rye, works really well when you have wet spring conditions and then dry summer conditions. Typically in the Northeast, that is what we are used to. We are used to having trouble accessing our fields in the spring because it is too wet, and then there being short-term droughts in midsummer or later in the season. However, we have seen some years where it's been very dry in the spring. And when you have cereal rye growing under dry conditions and you try to no-till soybean into that, that is when we're seeing a yield gap. And that's when farmers are seeing 5 to 10 bushel per acre yield drag when they're using that no-till system compared to traditional tillage-based organic soybean production. In terms of organic corn and corn yields, it really depends on seed placement and population. And so what we see is that when we have a good stand of corn, that's when our yields can match our traditional tillage-based organic corn production. But when we don't have a good stand, sometimes with corn and with no-till planting into hairy vetch, there can be issues with seed placement and with crop establishment.
I also posed this question to Vince. He told me about the yields he's seen with organic practices and reduced tillage.
Of course, the genetics of the corn and beans have definitely gotten better, more suited to this. So you can't attribute all of the yield gains over that time to this. I mean, some of it could be plant genetics, but I'm producing 2.5 times the yield on beans that we were 20 years ago. And the corn is about double what it was 20 years ago. And it's not a higher rate of fertilizer application. It's just addressing the issues of the soil.
And the yields are continuing to improve.
Over the past 20 years, the yield gains that we've recognized are definitely more than the yield gains of a conventional farmer, to the point where we're closing the gap. And I would say over the next 10 to 20 years, I don't foresee there to be any gap at all. I haven't seen them increase for a conventional farmer. I see their cost increasing. I see everything that they're doing is costing more to do, and the yield's not changing.
Well, what I've heard from the experts that you interviewed, Nate, is that there is no silver bullet, but there is definitely promise when it comes to reducing tillage in organic systems.
Absolutely. And I'd like to reflect just for a second on the top three takeaways from this episode, if you will. So the first, organic farmers are really interested in tillage reduction, as I think all farmers are. And interestingly, the amount of tillage going on organic farms and conventional farms is roughly the same. The second takeaway, I think, is that we have to look at a whole systems approach when considering tillage and organics. And third, because organics employs a suite of beneficial practices, we need to be looking at the end goal, like we discussed in the beginning, that organics does leave more soil organic carbon in the soil than conventional. And I think that's a pretty important one there.
I want to wrap up this first episode with a thought from Vince Yeager. He told me about why he has stayed with organics and why he believes that despite some of the questions right now, such as tillage, there is a lot of promise in the organic system.
Well, I love it. I think the new stuff that's coming out, and the new things we're going to try, and what I'm seeing everybody else try, it's changing so fast. The stuff that they're doing this year is compared to what we would have thought we could have done 5 years ago. It's unbelievable. The advancement is there. We're actually coming up with solutions and we're moving forward. It's not solving a problem by making a new one.
That was episode 1 of The Dirt on Organic Farming, a new podcast by the Organic Agronomy Training Service. OATS provides organic grain production training to agronomists, advisors, and crop consultants so that farmers will have better access to reliable, science-based advice for their unique farm operation. Special thanks to Vince Yeager, Drs. Jessica Shade, Joel Groover, Pat Carr, Perry Miller, and Matt Ryan. This episode was produced by Michaela Elias. For more information, go to www.organicagronomy.org. OATS is brought to you with funding support from Clif Bar. Clif Bar's journey to use organic ingredients started in 2003. We've learned along the journey that organic can be a catalyst for good. It is key to creating a healthier, more just, and sustainable food system for all of us. Organic farming is good for people and the planet. We've also learned that organic farming is innovative and can play a critical role in feeding a growing world. In order to do that, organic has to continue to improve. That's why we are the number one private funder of organic research in the U.S. and fund projects like OATS. We are proud to be working along with all of you to ensure that organic is here to stay for good and for generations to come. OATS is brought to you with funding support from King Arthur Baking Company,
who has been sharing the joy of baking since 1790. A certified B Corp, headquartered in Vermont, King Arthur is the ultimate baking resource, providing the highest quality ingredients for the most delicious baked goods. As a 100% employee-owned baking company, we believe in the power of baking to make a difference for our employee owners, the larger baking community, and the planet. We strive to be a force for good in all that we do, from cultivating a workplace that embraces differences and prioritizes trust, to teaching children across the country how to bake bread from scratch, to partnering with farmers and suppliers who share our vision for a greener planet. OATS is a programmatically independent consortium that is fiscally sponsored by the Organic Trade Association. OTA serves as an anchor funder for OATS through its industry-invested Grow Organic Research, Promotion, and Education Program. Grow Organic's Technical Assistance Program area seeks to meet goals of scalability, regional, and production system diversity in technical assistance for organic and transitioning farmers nationwide. Top donors to the Grow Organic Technical Assistance Program area help make OATS possible. Thank you to General Mills, Clif Bar, Stonyfield, King Arthur Baking Company, and Organic Valley. I'm Mallory Krieger.
And I'm Nate Palapalm.
Till next time, thanks for listening.